The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2, there's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
Hey, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm Mark Hadley, and welcome to The Big Picture for Monday, March the 9th. Coming up on today's show, the ABC's icy new thriller, Fortitude.
And the top five sleepover movies.
And the DVD release half the family has been waiting for, and well, let's face it, the other half have been regretting. Kicking off our show for the week, we're going to introduce you to Hollywood's next Pinocchio. And basically, this happens every few years. It's true.
Sorry, keep going with that.
I will. Don't interrupt me. I'm on a flow.
Didn't expect a Pinocchio reference in the first sentence. Keep going.
Every now and again, you get a story that turns up with basically a character who really wishes they were a real boy.
I see what you did there.
Thank you. Yeah, very clever.
Because that's what Pinocchio wanted, to be a real boy.
Thank you.
And that's why you're... Please keep going.
This was a great illustration right up until the point we drew it out. And so what you actually have is this newest version of that in the film Chappie, all about a robot who's basically learning to be a real boy.
Chappie, if you want to be in the gang, you have to be cool like Daddy. Look how Daddy walks. Look how cool he is. You need to keep a gangster,
Chappie. You need to keep a gangster.
Yeah, you need to be cool.
Don't laugh, I'm being cool.
Cool. Even when you put a gun, you have to be cool like this. Boom, and you try.
No, I can't shoot people.
What?
I can't shoot them. They didn't do anything to me.
How are you going to do the heist with us if you don't shoot people?
I can't do a heist. Heist is a crime. I promised.
Hey, it's okay. Hey, let's worry about that later, okay? I got this, all right?
I love the fact that Chappie has a South African accent. I just feel like if you're going to build a robot, go with something original and interesting.
Yeah,
Ben,
sure.
Tell us all about Chappie.
Well, Chappie is hitting cinemas this week, and it's the latest sci-fi outing from the South African writer-director Neil Blomkamp. I hope I'm getting that correct. He directed...
You've said it two different ways, so...
So one of those had to be
right. You're increasing it.
Yeah, but he made District 9 and Elysium. District 9, great. Elysium, not so much.
Good. Yeah.
But Chappie's starring our own Hugh Jackman and not our own Sigourney Weaver. And then the guy who was the main guy in Slumdog Millionaire, the Indian actor Dev Patel, who just seems now to be working in movies and TV as the IT bloke. He's stereotyped as the IT guy. I don't know why. Anyway, Chappie centers on a robot, as you mentioned earlier. And to help with, we're in the near future, of course, because it's a science fiction setting. Chappie is a robot who's built to help with civil unrest. So we've got Robocops, but this, I think, is less a reboot of the 1980s Robocop. And there was a reboot last year, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's a reboot of the reboot. Yeah.
There's already reboots, but I don't think this is another reboot of Robocop. Instead, Chappie's more like kind of Short Circuit or E.T. as a robot movie. As in, we've got a creature who's been rigged up with the ability to learn how to think and feel. So we've got something, humans, creating a creature that is like a child entering the big wide world. And it's a child, on this occasion, made up of weaponry and wiring. Mm. So I'm looking forward to this. Even though I was disappointed with Elysium, this to me looks a bit more like District 9. We've got the setting. Again, it's not just set in South Africa, but we've got this outsider coming in. And there's got this big clash going on in this movie of whether we should embrace this outsider and all the potential that it could have and hold for the human race. And on the other side, which is largely embodied by Hugh Jackman's character, which is we should either control technology or we should just fear it outright. So I'm expecting big things. One of the things I'm also expecting from Chappie is it'll dive more and more into artificial intelligence, which has become a little bit of a screen trend in the last couple of years. So like, for example, last year, my favorite film of last year was a movie called Her, which Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson, and you're laughing. Like, you shouldn't be
The only reason I'm laughing is because it was such a favourite film for you that I pretty much listened to four reviews of other films, which you just talked about her in.
Where can I get that in? But that start, Scarlett Johansson was the voice of this artificial intelligence operating system, and it was a great film about what makes up a human and that kind of stuff. We also had terrible movies last year, like Transcendence, that Johnny Depp film. Looking forward to that, hugely disappointed. Again, to do with what humans can create and the impact it's going to have on the human race. And then again, this year, after Chappie, there's other movies coming out. There's a movie called Ex Machina, but also Terminator. That what are we up to now? The fifth one in the Terminator series?
Yeah, Terminator 5 is coming out.
Terminator Genesis. So more focus on artificial intelligence, humans creating robots, and then at that point of creation, getting a little bit freaked out about what exactly have they created and what it's going to do. So I'm hoping Chappie... I'm hoping Chappie's been Elysium for a start.
Yeah, well, look, I think to begin with, Neil Blomkamp is returning to stuff that he knows really well.
Yeah.
Like, so he is a South African filmmaker. He's basing it in Joburg. It is really about life in the mean streets and what it's like for a child to grow up there. I mean, these are child films. I mean, we do this stuff all the time. So, number 5 is Alive.
Whoa.
How far back
that's
was I going to go?
Short Circuit reference has been heard since about 1987.
I was about to do Short Circuit, but there you go. So, War Games, you want to go back one step further? Electric Dreams. Every
just
few
basically
years,
just quote every second movie from the 80s. Then.
It is. Well, I was going to say Millennium Man, but that would be the 90s. And of course, She and then Ex Machina.
But then you say
Ex Machina.
But you didn't mention Blade Runner. You didn't even go as far back into the 30s as Metropolis, that great German film from Fritz Lang. And that is the nerdiest thing I'm going to say
we don't,
all segment.
We don't actually condone in any form drinking games, but you can take a sip of your coffee if you hear Ben refer to a black
Metropolis,
and white film.
Black and white, German,
and white
go
film,
and watch
there
it.
There we go, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
so where do you think we're at now with artificial intelligence? So I've been on screen for a long time, this focus on what humans can create and what happens as a result.
Look, as a scriptwriter, we are nowhere different to where we used to be, because even though it's about artificial intelligence, it's just about Pinocchio. This is about...
It all gets back to Pinocchio.
It is.
Every time.
This is a standard format. Like, if people... can finally create life. I mean, you've got, you know, scientists all over the world trying to work out, you know, the origins of life and can we recreate it in the test tube?
Yeah, I think these films really point to the fact that in the real world, there's a lot of this going on, isn't there? As in, scientifically speaking, what can we do?
But what is our responsibility?
That's right.
In the end, what sort of gods do we make? You know, we talk about the idea of getting godlike
or
powers.
Or what kind of god are we going to be
exactly.
And what can we make?
And so films like Chappie basically show us our limitations. They sort of say, okay, sure, we can do something, but does that mean we really should? And what sort of people do we need to be? What sort of creator would we like?
Yeah.
You know, what sort of creator are we looking for? We're looking for one that is actually going to know and understand us, not fear us or want to smash us. We're looking for one who's actually going to love us and nurture us and bring us on. I mean, these are reflections into what we'd actually like to see. And so scriptwriters sit down and they don't just sort of like, oh, yeah, I think he'll run around a corner now and fire a gun. They're actually trying to set up a situation in Chappie where in which we will ask ourselves the question, what is it like to be a god? And what sort of god would we like to see in this universe?
Yeah, hopefully that's done with more subtlety and sophistication than Elysium. So that last movie that Neil Blomkamp made that Matt Damon and Jodie Foster were in, which sounded great, about this excellent portrait of the future where poverty has got to such extent that the rich are off the planet in their own planet, living actually literally off the planet. And then, but what I thought was too heavy-handed was a social commentary in that film about asylum-seeking, about poverty, about the divide between rich and poor. It was just rammed down your throat. What I'm hoping Chappie...
Elysium, was his second album syndrome.
What I'm hoping Chappie doesn't do is that, and it doesn't ram it down your throat, but instead confronts you with situations where you sit back and reflect. And one of the issues with Transcendence last year, that terrible Johnny Depp film, is that because this world that you're getting into, artificial intelligence, is so massive and still so unwieldy, and it has so much potential, though, as a result, it's got too much potential and you don't know what to do with it. So Transcendence did not know what to do with its own idea. And once it gets to a guy who effectively becomes the internet, which is what Johnny Depp became, the internet, where do you go from in there? I hope Chappie is more contained, more focused, and gives me more space to think myself about these bigger issues.
Yeah, if in fact Johnny Depp became the internet, then he became not the internet I know, which is like Johnny Depp would be sitting in a corner taking 20 minutes to do something. And I'd be staring at him going, come on, if you're going to dominate the universe, do it now. Come on, please do it now. No. Look, if Chappie has something for us, then I think what Chappie is actually going to do is give us that reminder to look beneath the shell. Because there's a certain sense, Neil Blomkamp has set this in South Africa for a very good reason, because it gives us a chance to look at social commentary as well. So you've got a chance where this robot, okay, is not just the steel and metal on the outside, but is the heart on the inside. And like from a Christian perspective, I love that sort of stuff. Because if there is ever a character in human history who's been able to look past the exterior and find something inside that's worthy of saving. That's Jesus. You know, he looks at Matthew, a tax collector who people hate. He looks at lepers. He looks at blind Bartimaeus, who, you know, who's sitting by the side of the road screaming, "Someone do something for me," and everybody else is going, "Be quiet, be quiet," until Jesus pays attention to him.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a sense in which when we look at these films and go, "I think Chappie should be heard," we actually want people to look at us beyond the exterior and go, "I want to be heard. I want somebody to actually love me. I want somebody to actually sort of see me."
Yeah.
And that's why I think it can be a great film for us, especially from a Christian perspective.
Yeah, so both of us are looking forward to it. Chappie is at cinemas this week. It looks like it's going to be the thinking person's science fiction movie of the moment. Here's hoping it will be.
Let's move on now to basically what's in fact our newest segment for the new show. Actually, it's not new at all. We've done it once already.
It's old now.
It's our second newest.
It's like old new.
Okay. We're talking about soundtrack, where we like to try and introduce people to the music behind the films and the music behind the television programs, the sort of stuff that gives you the emotional lift or the jitters, you know, depending on what you're watching. And Ben, this week you're going to take us through soundtrack.
Yeah, so on the record player this week in our soundtrack section, we're going to focus on movie songs that have become so big in their own right that you might actually have forgotten they were originally from a movie.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door. I don't care what they're going to say. Let the storm rage on. The cold never bothered me anyway.
As far as I understand, that's a song called Let It Go from a movie called Frozen. And my puzzlement is just because I understand that that movie apparently is enormous and the song is even more enormouser, but that's the first time I've ever heard that song.
Yeah, I'm stunned, okay, but I can understand.
Guy.
I can understand
guy.
It. You're that guy. Look, the reason why you haven't, okay, is because, as I understand, your daughter has only just been born.
You understand, correct,
okay,
yes.
So there you go. So having kids in our household, this song has permeated.
But you have all boys. Isn't Frozen a little
chick flick? Okay, now listen, I didn't want you to out my children. Now, look, my boys actually... didn't really get into it, but by virtue of the fact that they've got friends and that sort of stuff, this whole Frozen phenomena has just enveloped our household. So even though we have a household of three boys, my wife would say four boys, we had to sit down at one point and watch Frozen, and the boys showed the level of interest due to young boys. They walked off, and I found myself sitting with my wife watching Frozen, and in fact, I even started singing the theme song at one stage because she had the remote, and I was going, let it go, because I just... Don't know. It's
so
a real girl's film.
Frozen was only out a year ago, maybe a bit more. But you reckon it's already reached this level where people just forget that song came from that movie and instead just sing it as their daily anthem.
It's a real girl power anthem. It's like one of those ones from which it really talks about the idea of a woman having the power to leave past and behind and strike out on her own.
Sure.
You've got lines like "the cold never bothered me anyway,"
and
"no right, no wrong,
yeah.
no rules for me."
Right.
You know, and, yeah, so.
Yeah, empowerment, sister. Okay.
Well, and that's all we really need.
Right. Yeah, that's Let It Go from the Frozen soundtrack on the soundtrack segment this week. Now, moving into what's showing on TV. Mark, it got a little bit cooler in here earlier when you walked in. It did. No, it did. But it's about to get even cooler because you're going to put us in snow boots and earmuffs to guide us through the latest UK creation that's airing on ABC. We're talking about Fortitude, and Mark reckons you should tune in right now to Fortitude.
I chose a life of crime in a town where there's none. I studied criminal law on the mainland, came to Fortitude, and married a policeman. Our honeymoon was a night of thrills and magic. We saw the most spectacular aurora borealis I'd ever seen. The fireworks of the gods, as we call it, the heavens singing. You can actually hear them, you know, the northern lights outside the city. And now we are building a hotel hewn into the glacier itself, where lovers of the wilderness, lovers of the northern lights, or just lovers, can witness the wildest things they'll ever see from the safest place on Earth.
So it's a little bit of a grab from Fortitude, Mark. What can you tell the people about it?
Look, I've got to say that it is one of the coolest, thrillers that are basically out at the moment. Now, thriller television is nothing new. Murder mystery is nothing new.
No, sir.
Setting it in the Arctic Circle, an island somewhere north
That's
of
a little
Norway.
Bit new.
Yeah. So basically, Fortitude is the name of a mythic sort of town that has basically about 750 people in it on an ice frozen island, you know, in that Arctic Circle, on a land where in which it's supposed to be idyllic. You know, the characters will tell you that because to come to Fortitude, you've really got to have a job anyway. So everyone's employed. And if you've got a job, you've got a place to live because you can't live in Fortitude without dying without a place to live. So everyone's got a roof over their head.
Right.
Everyone's got a job.
Sounds like a magical icy land.
Yeah, in a sense that you've basically got no threats. You've got no theft. They say they've got no sort of real social problems.
Until?
So people start dying all over the place.
Right. Yeah. Is this basically just Murder, She Wrote set in the Arctic?
It's not, because for a start, you really just don't know where the threat's coming from.
Yeah.
It's not unusual for murder mysteries to have sort of multiple threat directions, but I spend half the program just freaking out quietly in my seat because the polar bear population on the island is 3,000 and the number of people is 750.
Top odds for the polar bears.
You do the math.
Yeah. No wonder they're there.
The series kicks off with, it is M-rated TV. The series kicks off with a bear killing a man.
Yeah, I watched the first episode and that is true.
Disturbing.
That definitely happens.
Yeah.
So I only watched the first one and I actually wasn't as gripped as it sounds like you are, but you've watched more than I have. What happens after the first episode, which is one of those first episodes where it sets up what you can see is going to develop across the rest of the season?
Definitely push past the first episode if you have any troubles doing it. Firstly, I think that the camera work is brilliant. I think you've got great acting. I mean, you've got Stanley Tucci turns up in the second episode as the detective
from
the
mainland. I wished he turned up in the first one. I was waiting for the Tucci.
Christopher Eccleston. Now, people might know that. Christopher Eccleston, the former Doctor Who. I think he's Doctor Who 6. I don't know. I'll be corrected on that.
Nerdiest thing you're going to say today.
There we go. And Michael Gambon's in it too.
Oh,
and he's just brilliant talent. So there's great acting credibility. But what happens is that the story unfolds that there's this million-dollar hotel development that's basically going to save the future of the island, carved into the glacier, romantic getaway, see the northern lights. But then there's also, and that's up in odds now, if murders are going to take place, well, obviously not many people are going to want to have a romantic getaway where people are going to be eaten by polar bears. And then you also have a situation where an icy mammoth is uncovered, and this is a fantastically expensive and sort of like lucrative discovery, and yet at the same time, you've got a police chief who's clearly covering up violent deaths, you know, for some reason.
So apart from the setting, but as you mentioned earlier, like thrillers and murder mysteries on TV are nothing new, as you said. So what is new about this show? What keeps you watching? Why go back to it?
I think the first thing is it tells us, it's like the frog in the pan of lukewarm water to watch, that you get, because we come in new to the Arctic, you suddenly see stuff that people have become used to in a way that, you know, is really quite surprising. So when you see the first child walk down the road with a rifle slung over their shoulder, you kind of think, oh, a bit unusual. Mm. When you see people taking high-powered weapons in their shopping trolleys and they're pushing them out of the way so they can put cans in and things like that, you start to realize that human beings can actually become quite used to the most bizarro circumstances and call them normal when they're just not normal.
Yeah.
And in fact, like, I think that that's part of the thematic charm of the film, that we actually start
of the TV show. Does it dig deeper into themes? And so it sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on here about commerce, about about lies and deception, about apparently idyllic situation, but obviously because we're humans, that's not going to happen.
That's one of the other things that's really worth looking at as a production, is that from a Christian perspective, we'll recognize that creating utopias is a real dream. It's never actually going to happen.
Count down the minutes to when it goes bad.
Yeah, and exactly. And in this case, you see that something that should be working, on the surface, every element says there shouldn't be any problems here. But man,
apart from things freezing all the time.
Yeah, and the polar bears eating everybody. Yeah. But like, it shouldn't be a problem. But what you see is a world that is going to spin out of control, not because of the polar bears and not because of the weather, but because people are in it. You know, and that for me is a really interesting observation. It's great in terms of the thriller. There's no great hero to come in and save everything. There's no perfect character who says, who represents humanity at their best. No, what we've got is a world that is spinning out of control because people are in it.
And so finally, as we wrap up now showing on TV this week, we're talking about Fortitude. What would you recommend the show to people who are big fans of that? There's been a number of TV series, particularly out of Scandinavia in the last couple of years, that have been massive on SBS and ABC and also watching at home on demand. Would you recommend this show to them? Because for me, it had a little bit of the feel of everything from like Borgen to The Bridge and that kind of thing.
I was
going to
say,
is it for people who like those shows?
If you liked The Tunnel, which was basically the British version of The Bridge, you know, then you're going to love this series. Okay, I think it's going to be great value. I think that if you like complex thrillers, and I don't mean Midsummer Murders, you know, if you like, if you like that, I know. Sorry, it's just personal hate.
But it's so true.
If you like that sort of thing, then you are going to like this. So this is the British version of HBO. It's really quality television.
You had me a British version of HBO.
There you go. Film and television programs are basically that benchmark in our life. You know, we often find them around significant events, like the first time you're allowed to go to the pictures on your own and you got that little posse together on the train.
And pictures, you mentioned in the same sentence. People call them still the pictures now? Go to the pictures?
Man,
that's what my mum says.
I go old enough that I remember actually saying, can we go to the flicks? That's a whole other world back then.
Okay, you interrupted your reminiscing for us.
So anyway, you see these sort of things as benchmarks in our lives.
Yeah.
The first time you're allowed to stay up late and watch something with dad on TV that normally you'd be in bed for. So when you look at these things, you actually remember great events. Now, this brings us to our next segment, Press Record. Press Record is where we share your stories about what it was like to grow up with film and television and other sort of things like that. And you share with us just what a big impact they make, beginning with the sleepover. I mean, what was...
beginning with the sleepover.
that's right.
All the defining moments in your life, the sleepover.
The sleepover film is a defining moment. I guarantee, like we asked all these people, you can remember the first time you slept over at a mate's place or something like that to watch the film. Yeah, I don't know if you can remember a sleepover that you were at a kid, or you saw a video or at a party at somebody's place. Can you remember one that sticks out to you, one that you remember?
The only one I can remember was watching Finding Nemo back in year 5 or year 6, way back.
What did you think of that at the time? Were you thinking, oh wow, this is lame, or this is the best thing I've ever seen?
More towards the latter end. I thought it was pretty cool. Little floating orange fish talking with sharks and stuff was pretty captivating for a 10-year-old back then.
My daughters have had friends over for sleepovers, yeah.
And what sort of films do you show them?
Disney films, yeah. Like Beauty and the Beast, that kind of thing, Aladdin, yeah.
Nice safe territory.
Yeah, Frozen, you know, yeah.
Which sounds like what you would be in front of that film.
Precisely, yeah, that's it.
What was the film that you guys were watching?
The first two Harry Potter movies.
Back to back?
Yep.
So you stayed up to, oh my goodness, from 7 till probably what, 11?
Yeah, we got to sleep at 2 o'clock.
There seems to be a lot more going on between those films.
Yeah. High School Musical. Yep, love it. The singing classics, the boy meets girl romance, High School Musical 1 has everything.
Now, was this actually like a girl event? Did you guys actually know enough of it to start singing along or just adoring the characters?
Not only singing, we danced. We knew the dance moves and we danced along together. Watched number one, got halfway through number two. Loved it.
Remember the Titans.
A football film and an American football film at that.
It was. And it was my Bible study group. We had an afternoon in because it was raining. We were going to go and play sport somewhere, and so we needed a substitute for that because we couldn't do that, so we watched Remember the Titans. Denzel Washington at his finest.
I've got to know, did it finish in like a lounge room football game?
I don't recall, but maybe I got knocked out, and that's why I don't recall.
It was The Matrix. That was like a big, big deal. I think I was in like year 7 or something like that. Maybe year 6 or year 7. And everyone was raving about, you know, just the whole concept and like, am I in The Matrix and all that kind of stuff. That was the main topic of conversation after watching the movie, yeah.
Year 7, watching The Matrix, did you actually have to convince your parents that that was okay?
I don't think Mum knew. I think I was at somebody else's house, yeah. Yeah, I didn't tell her.
That's a terribly familiar story. Yeah. What were you and all the girls up to? What film were you guys watching?
We actually watched Titanic one time, but I think most of us fell asleep, thankfully, because it was quite scary for me. I was in primary school, so...
Did you have to actually convince your parents, oh, Titanic will be good, that's okay, Mum?
They didn't know. It was one of those regular sleepovers and I happened to be watching, so, yeah.
Have you gone on any long boat trips since?
No, I'm not really a fan of boats, so... Probably because of that.
Well, there was a couple of different perspectives on sleepovers and the sleepover movie and the impact it had on people's lives. That was our press record segment for this week. Now, that moves us nicely into our top 5 list for this week. I hope you've got your pillows ready because it's time to have a pillow fight. Mark, you're going to lead us into the top 5 list of sleepover movies. Now, as I understand it, the list you're about to give us is a surefire hit to please the crowds at an all-nighter on your lounge room floor. So you're going to heat up some Milo for us and tell us to
And don't,
the movie's about to start.
Yeah, and if in fact this is over my house, if we're doing sleepovers over my house to watch films, then I'm the guy who sits in the background and goes, do you really want to talk over the dialogue? Do you really want to miss that? Because as I am a scriptwriter, I hate people talking over dialogue and stuff like that. My kids, well, they're getting used to it. I've got 3 young boys, and so when I put this list together, I was really thinking about what sort of thing would you actually get young kids in and you'd be happy for them to watch?
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Let's begin with number 5.
5.
I can't go past for young boys.
5.
You're never going to get over that.
That's going to take me some time.
Okay.
Sorry.
I can't get over The Avengers as a film for young boys. Now, there's just...
It's not too violent?
It's well, that's what you would think, okay? But there's a certain sort of separation. Firstly, I'll just begin by saying that for parents who are worried about violence in film, I do put a hard limit somewhere around 5 years old, okay? Because generally speaking, neuroscience has shown that kids under 5 do have a problem distinguishing between fantasy and reality.
Sure, yeah.
It's not like they can't tell that Iron Man exists or doesn't exist. It's just that their emotions are very impacting for them. Okay, so this is the caveat. If you've got kids over 5 and they're boys, they're going to love The Avengers. The violence is cartoonish violence. It's smash, bang, grab sort of violence. So you don't have to worry about it too much. There is no language to worry about. There are no sex scenes to worry about or anything like that. There is basic... This is a solid, sound, smash 'em, grab 'em film, and kids are really going to love it. Boys are really going to enjoy that. Possibly not as much, though, I think, as our next film.
4.
Okay, this is me digging back into the archives. E.T., the extraterrestrial. Thank you.
Well played.
Take my bows now. I've got to say...
Why should we be screening, as if we don't know, why should we be screening E.T. at Sleepovers, Mark?
Spielberg peaked too early.
You've called it. Right, on the big picture this week, headline, Spielberg peaked too early.
This is it. E.T. the Extraterrestrial is pretty much, I think, my favourite film, you know, from Spielberg. And in fact, it is one of those films where you get to feel what it is like to be the outsider and the other through the eyes of a little alien. It's a lovable film. You've got kids in it who are up against the man, against the government, who are trying to save this alien from the big nasty people. But what they're actually learning in the process is that just because somebody doesn't look like us and talk like us and walk like us, in fact, E.T. kind of waddles more than walks, just because they have light up fingers, you know, and not normal ones like us, doesn't mean that they aren't actually lovable people. And this is a really important lesson for kids to get under their belt.
And
so it's a sleepover film.
And it's got
great.
That amazing undercurrent of life, death and resurrection in E.T. We, like, go
Absolutely.
Back and watch it for that kind of stuff and like think about the 2 o'clock in the morning conversations you're going to have at a sleepover about the deeper meanings of E.T. So that's number 4, E.T. What have you got next?
3.
You can't go past this next film. And I've got to say,
can't
honestly, you can't. And it's not because you don't want to.
Just tell Look, us. Tell
okay.
us.
Anne of Green Gables.
Right.
Now I'm
so
telling you.
I'm about done then for the day.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. You
Dude.
And no, look.
Okay.
You have just alienated half of the listening audience because there are a bunch of...
Or you have just alienated half
of... Yeah, I've done the other
Defend
half.
Defend thyself.
Anne of Green Gables is that ultimate girl night film. Okay, I've attended.
Careful.
I've attended these films where the sleepovers are not being conducted by 12-year-old girls who want to find out what happens with dear Anne, you know, and her shenanigans as she romps around her island home. There are 40-year-old women who still have parties together to get together to watch the Anne of Green Gables saga. This is an epic tale. And really what it is an epic tale about friendship. You know, the guys do have versions of this, okay? So, you know, Stand By Me is the guy version.
Yeah, if you mentioned Stand By Me...
then you would have been okay, I know.
So, what you're saying is Anne of Green Gables is the female Stand By Me?
It is.
Okay, I'm back on board.
If you've got girls in your house... and you're doing a girl summer party, you are not going to go wrong with Anne of Green Gables because it's going to be about what you are prepared to do for your friends. Now, I want to say that friendship has taken a really kind of strange turn in the 21st century. Friendship now is very much about what I gain from my friends and how they make me feel and how they empower me to do something. You know, even the phrase "you go, girl" is about people saying, you know, go and do that. I'm behind you all the way. That sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas friendship in, you know, pre-21st century was very much about what somebody is going to give up for you, how they're going to exchange you, how much they're prepared to put their life on the line for you or stand in the way of danger for you.
Want to sleep over with Anne of Green Gables.
Anne of Green Gables is all about what she will do for her friends.
But what's in at number two? Two.
This is my favourite film made by non-Christians for Christians. Prince of Egypt. You cannot
wrong that DreamWorks film. Animation DreamWorks. Like 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, and it was executive produced by Spielberg, so maybe I did make a mistake by saying that he...
might want to back up on the Spielberg front.
Prince of Egypt is basically the story from Exodus done in an animation form with an incredible...
Please tell me it's better than the movie Exodus, Gods and Kings, that was out last year.
I've got to say, it has to be the benchmark film for teaching kids about redemption, and in particular, that part of the Bible.
Would you go so far as saying it's the best Bible movie made?
I would. I'll go out there and say it is the best Christian film made. I'll up you one.
Wow. So at number two on your sleepover list...
Even though it's not made by Christians.
You're recommending this for sleepovers, the best Bible movie that's ever been made.
It is the most exciting, subtle way to talk all about God and how much he loves his people and, in fact, the need for sacrifice to save. It is the easiest in for introducing Christianity into any form
of... And doing it in an entertaining, musical, animated way, which sounds awesome. So I don't
understand... parents will be in the background and they'll be doing a little bit of the, oh, that's a little sweet, the crying bit. At least I do.
That's you in the background. So given you've gone out with saying that's the best Bible movie ever, non-Christian movie made for Christians, that's at number two. What can possibly be at number one? One.
It is part of everybody's education at one stage in their life.
You mean maths?
No, I mean Star Wars. You have got to sit down and you've got to watch Star Wars. Yes. You can't operate in this society without...
Which Star Wars, Mark, referring to? You mean Jar Jar Binks Star Wars?
I mean, Binks. I hate the fact, I come from the generation when we said Star Wars, we actually meant Star Wars. We mean Volume 4, A New Hope, or The New Hope. Look, it is an excellent film that kids of all ages... You've got great figures for girls and boys to love. Okay, you've got Princess Leia. She's got a gun. She's got droids. What more could you want to be as a girl? You've got all the sort of robot chicanery. You've got all of the heroes. If you see yourself as a kid, more of the Han Solo type, or maybe you see yourself more of the Luke Skywalker type, or maybe, you know, and as I see you, probably more of the Wookiee type. You know, thank you.
Thanks, R2.
It is a film that is actually very easy to watch. It's at an age in which you don't have to worry. It was made in a time when we really didn't have to worry about a lot of sort of things like sort of material you wouldn't want your kids to have to forget or get over. But more importantly, what Star Wars has is a whole sort of thematic thing about issues that are worth dying for. And look, you can't go past Obi-Wan Kenobi without realizing that he believes that it is so important that he would give his life for something. And again, a very easy in, a safe film to watch, and a very easy in to talk about things that are worth devoting your life to. In fact, why would I even bother when I can actually let Darth Vader make the argument for me?
I've been waiting for you, Obi-Wan. We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Only a master of evil, Darth.
Your powers are weak, old man.
You can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Take that, Darth. Actually, I think it was the other way around. I think at that point that actually Ben got cut. But
that was the top five this week. That's the worst Darth Vader ever. Let's move on.
Time for our second installment of Soundtrack for the Week. And speaking of songs that seem to have outlasted their films, it's hard to go past John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. Well, basically because they're here, but it's very hard to go past Grease.
Soundtrack segment where we're focusing on these songs that seem to have got bigger than the movie, or you may have even forgotten that they were from a movie originally, which got me thinking about other songs like this. And a lot of these songs I really don't like, but as I say them, they're going to get stuck in your head, so I apologize that they're going to annoy you, but they've been annoying me all week, but I've still been thinking about them. So songs like Staying Alive by the Bee Gees, that was actually from Saturday Night Fever, another John Travolta movie, or that Whitney Houston song I Will Always Love You, you know, that massive power ballad, that was from The Bodyguard. You get other movies like, I think particularly youngsters now may not have realized that Rocky was a movie out, you know, a long time ago, and there was a great song from that called Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. That's other couple of songs I think that have just, like, they've gone gangbusters outside the movie, and you may actually have forgotten that there was a movie at the beginning.
There's sometimes when these songs actually make sort of real impacts in our lives in ways that we're not even pleasant about. I think you know when a film makes a real sort of impact when you know that schools organise choreographed dancing to it.
Oh, I was just thinking how I never want to think about Everything I Do It For You, that Bryan Adams song from the Robin Hood movie. Oh. Like, that impacted my life in bad ways.
I know. I can see the flicks you must have had in your hair
Sleepless
at that point.
Nights, friends. Sleepless nights.
I remember actually, particularly with this Grease track, you know, You're the One I Want, standing in a playground, you know, like, almost like a Korean state scene, if you can see it. 100 kids being led through the same movements. Now everybody turn to your left and do this with your hands.
You're the one that I want.
As if we would actually be dancing that way. So look, songs, you know, they have a way of undergirding films. And in a sense, we'll be sharing more of that with you as we go on week by week. The segment we're going to get into now is something we really want you to be thinking hard about, and that is what your kids are watching. Now, what your kids are watching may not be what you're watching. You may not even...
No, it probably isn't.
You may not be going to the cinemas with them. You may have kids of a particular age or in which they're just not inviting you anymore. You're not even the transport, okay? They've got the L's, they've got the P's. Actually, if they've got the L's, you really should still be in the car. Just a hint there. But you know, as far as this sort of stuff is concerned, you really want to be aware of what is going on. So even if you're not going to watch it, we want to give you insights. Yep. So Ben, this week.
But our choice this week, though, surely every parent out there knows of this choice. Like, they have to. It's such a monster of a movie. We're talking about something that's been released on DVD and on Blu-ray. We're talking about The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1.
Sorry, I almost just headbutted my microphone. And because I hear the horribly long title.
Oh, I know, I was getting tired of saying it.
And then when you get to the end, it says part one, you just know it's not over.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to go on.
Look, if you don't know your kids are watching this, then you haven't been watching your kids that closely. I don't think The Hunger Games has been massive the last couple of years. The first of the books are now the movies. For my money, this what are we up to now? The third installment in the Hunger Games series. And yeah, for anyone playing at home who doesn't know what we're talking about, it's this, again, near future dystopian setting. This is a story aimed at young adults. It stars this woman, Jennifer Lawrence, playing a character called Katniss.
Katniss Everdeen.
Katniss Everdeen. There's games in this future world where kids are selected and they've got to kill each other to be the last survivor at the end. It's meant to be a bit of a comment on everything from reality TV to warfare going on in the world at the moment. In this installment, we've got an underground rebellion movement happening against the Capitol, which is the big evil empire that's going on that kind of lords it over everybody. That's pretty much it. And for me, the Mockingjay Part 1, I don't know why we needed Part 1. Why couldn't they have added Part 2? Because Part 1 was just one of those bridge movies. You know those movies that it's not really a movie in and of itself. It just goes from whatever came before it to whatever came after it. Yeah. It's just linking you, and really nothing happens.
Now, there's a point, and people should understand that, look, it's not a problem to have a bridge film. There are good bridge films. The Empire Strikes Back is probably the best example of a great bridge film.
Yeah, yeah. The Twin Towers is a pretty good one, the Lord of the Rings series.
Yeah, you have an arc within it that's satisfying. When you get to the end of Mockingjay Part 1, you're just going, really? Did anything happen? Was that all preamble to what the next film?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel that if there's anything to be said about Mockingjay Part 1, though, you know, if you're sitting down and you're watching it and you're saying to you, or your kids are going, oh, when are we buying this? Or it's a prospective present for a daughter. I can't see it being a prospective present for a boy.
Not as much.
Don't buy that for a boy. Okay, but if you have basically got that and you're sitting and I'm watching it together, then one of the things I would say is worthwhile is considering the place of real suffering within conflict. Now, too often when we see these sort of dystopian futures and these struggles, things are wrapped up really too neatly. What we actually get a look at in Mockingjay Part 1 is Peter Mallark is sort of this return character. He's the boyfriend that Katniss does have, doesn't have. It's an on again, off again sort of thing. And he has suffered really serious trauma associated with this whole conflict that's going on. And you get to see that, look, if we're going to talk about striving for something, if we're going to talk about overturning bad habits, or you know, in the person or in the society, there's going to be real pain involved. There's going to be a real struggle, and it's helpful for people to actually ask, would you still be friends with that person even though they're a real mess? You've got Katniss who's saying, "I love him no matter what has happened to him."
Yeah, but then kind of turning that on its head, one of the things I don't like about the Hunger Games series is it's got these great themes and ideas that are fantastic for talking to your kids about, particularly things like self-sacrifice and even the initial concept of the Hunger Games and these kids like battling to the death says a lot. It's handled better on screen than it sounds, but it also says a lot about what you would be willing to die for, as you just mentioned. And then in this movie, there's a lot of focus on warfare. What I don't like about the films, though, is they've got these themes, but then they don't really do much with them. They just present them. And so for me as a viewer, one of the things I was actually offended by in Mockingjay Part 1 was the depiction of warfare on the screen. And there's a lot of talk about propaganda and is warfare entertainment and that kind of thing. That comes up in the movie. But for me, the movie doesn't actually tell me what I should think about that. And actually what I felt was I'm actually being entertained by warfare and propaganda. And this is at a time when warfare is erupting around the... I mean, warfare is going on around the world all the time. But yeah. This, when I saw it in the cinemas, it was a week where there was stuff going on the news every single night about horrific things happening to people in the real world. Mm. But Mockingjay, I just thought, was entered blockbuster entertainment, pure and simple. So it would be great to talk to your kids about the desensitizing impact of watching warfare on screen, because I don't think Mockingjay helps you with that, but it does raise the issue that you can talk to them about it.
Yeah, look, that's the best you can hope for. That, in fact, it actually starts the conversation and maybe it can be part of it. Look, a hint to parents. It is very, very hard. It should be very, very hard to actually get our kids to think. It's a normal process. You're actually training brains. So don't feel bad if the conversation goes nowhere, but just start by asking, what do you think about that? To my way of thinking, if you can get a child to move from, I just watched that, to, I also thought about it, then you're ahead on points.
Yeah.
So what did you think?
So what your kids are definitely watching this week is The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1.
This is my assistant, Masala.
It's an honor to meet you.
And your cameraman over there, Castor?
Hello.
And Pollux.
Let's get locked in.
You're all from the Capitol? Plutarch got you out?
Don't expect much chit-chat from him. Capitol cut his tongue out years ago. And no, it wasn't any sort of rescue, if that's what you mean. We all fled on our own. For this.
That's what your kids are going to be watching this week. I'm sorry, Katniss. I don't mean to talk over you that way. Look, that's what your kids are watching. I guess the question now is, what will you be watching? So in our segment now, what is coming up this week? What's on this week?
This is our quick wrap-up of what's going on in what cinemas and TV and DVD.
And Video Land.
To help you make those decisions. So before you get to the... DVD stores don't even exist anymore,
no,
do they?
No, before you actually dial into the menu.
That's right. Before you even think about what you're going to watch, we're going to let you know what you're going to think about and help you make that choice.
Okay, so let's start off with what's in TV. Look, TV this week, we've already said it, ABC Sundays. If you haven't dialed into Fortitude yet, 9:30 p.m., I'd actually go and have a look at it. The great thing about ABC iView is you can keep getting back to these sort of episodes. There's a good 30-day period. You haven't missed anything. In fact, you've got a good binge session ahead of you.
Yeah, on demand equals good times.
That's it. So start programming for yourself. Don't actually take somebody else's, you know, decisions for you. I actually don't think I've done free-to-air in so long.
Like it That's might... another segment, Mark. Another I know, segment. It might Keep be going like 2 years.
So I'm moving on. Okay, on 7 this week, okay, if you are not doing Fortitude, why not flick over to Downton Abbey? They've come Look, I liked it for seasons 1, yep. 2. I was kind of there for 3. 4 that. Lost me. We're up to season 5. Okay, so if you want to get into more period drama and see the...
Just need to watch Gosford Park, the movie that Downton Abbey was based on. It's 2 hours. You get everything that Downton Abbey has.
Now, look...
Discuss.
You see, not only now do all the women who watch Anne of Green Gables don't like
you. I just alienated that part of the population.
You just lost.
Okay, let's move on to what else is on TV so I can save myself quickly.
Okay, and of course, on March 11th, in DVD, Kill the Messenger is being released, which is a great...
Did you see it?
No. I'm actually.
We're both keen to then.
Kill the Messenger is a great opportunity to basically see what happens when people who actually have are basically the bearers of bad news become the responsible for the reaction to it. Look, I think it's a great film. I won't tie up too much time about what's actually coming out in the cinemas.
I can't believe that you missed it on DVD. That's coming out. The film that won the best prize at the Cannes Film Festival last year, and I know you know this film, Mark, called Winter Sleep. It was a Turkish film. It was 3.5 hours long, and it's one of the best movies I've watched for ages. Again, Turkish, 3.5 hours long, Cannes film winner. Dude, it was fantastic. Winter Sleep. Run out to the shops and get it.
Yes, Winter Sleep.
If there is shops that have it, Winter Sleep.
Aptly named.
How dare thee? I can't believe you left that off the list. Okay, moving on to cinemas this week. What's coming out? There's a movie called Inherent Vice. I'm a big fan of the writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson, who's made Magnolia and There Will Be Blood. They're not necessary movies for everybody, and I'd imagine Inherent Vice will be a bit wall-to-wall when it comes to profanity and nudity and those kind of things. And why I'm interested in it, not just because Paul Thomas Anderson's made it, but it looks like a really good throwback to 60s, 70s kind of psychedelic cinema from America. It's got Joaquin Phoenix, Owen Wilson, Reese Witherspoon, and Omar from The Wire. It's Michael Kenneth
over,
Williams.
Yeah.
But anyway, it looks like a really
I'll hold up the wire cup
that I brought into the studio just for that reference, and I didn't use it. Anyway, it looks like a really kind of ramshackle, detective, hard-boiled, semi-hard-boiled, psychedelic freak out of a movie set in LA. I'm really looking forward to Inherent Vice. That's the cinemas this week. Also in cinemas, Top 5 is this movie that Chris Rock, the comedian, has written and directed and stars in, and it looks pretty good. Again, there'll be a warning on language and like sexual content, and there'll be a lot of stuff in this movie, I think, that to offend. Why it looks really interesting, though, is that Chris Rock is kind of playing himself effectively. He's playing a stand-up comedian who is about to be married to a reality TV star, and the TV star wants the wedding to be shot as part of the show. And I think the movie, which has got great reviews overseas, is all about celebrity, cult of celebrity, and racial politics as well. All of that wrapped up into one movie that stars Tracy Jordan from, I've forgotten the name of the show, that TV show with the thing with the guy with the, you know, 30 Rock.
There we go.
30 Rock. Phew, saved it.
I got to say that this is a semi-autobiographical film too, in the way that like Chris Rock actually reflects on the fact that if you want to do more than just be the funny guy all the time, if you actually want to try and do a serious role, you're trapped. You're not necessarily able to do that. And so in the same way, look, you'll go and you'll get great, you know, Chris Rock comedy, but at the same time, you'll get an insight and that sort of stuff. When we can laugh and learn, it's a brilliant film.
All right, so maybe one word to sum up Top 5 this week is poignant, which would be unexpected for a Chris Rock film. The last couple of movies I'll just get through fairly quickly. There's a movie called Kidnapping Mr. Heineken. that Kidnapping Mr. Heineken, which stars Anthony Hopkins as Mr. Heineken, as in Heineken Beer, that massive international beer company.
Based on a true story.
Based on a true story that Australian actors Sam Worthington and Ryan Kwanten both star in. And it's a drama about the, as it says in the title, the kidnapping of Mr. Heineken, which apparently, according to the IMDb summary, says that it was the most, it led to the most amount of ransom paid for any individual in the history of humankind. So that's the cinemas this week, Kidnapping Mr. Heineken. I'd more highly recommend another movie called The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, and I'll finish on this note. This is painting me into this corner of being a bit of an art house guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, this film is weird.
Dude, I know I did that with my Winter Light reference. I'm going to do it again with The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. If you want something different to the bigger films that are going on at the moment, Chappie and Inherent Vice and Top Five, The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, them... in short, The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby is actually three different movies. There were one movie was made from the version from the perspective of the guy involved. The other version was made from the perspective of the woman involved, and this one is a compilation of the two, showing both of their perspectives.
Yeah. Now, this is the fact that I think that it's a judgment on Australian audiences, and they basically go, yes, we've done something art house, but what we're going to do for the Australian audience is we'll put the two films together and release it as well.
So if you're not going to be condescended to, that'd be good. Don't get offended by that suggestion that we can't work out all these movies at once and then put it all together, because the compilation movie is excellent. It stars James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain. What I really liked about it, it's hard going, but it's a great movie about the impact of grief on a relationship. And for me, it's a movie that doesn't explain too much, but what it does give away, you can really resonate with and feel with. It's not a likable film. It's not the sort of movie that on a Friday night, just for laughs, you want to go see. But The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, it'll be showing at art house cinemas around the place. Check it out. It's a really great film.
That wraps us up for this week. Thanks very much for being part of The Big Picture. Coming up next week
is, on The Big Picture, we're going to investigate fraud. That's right, Mark, fraud in Tim Burton's Big Eyes.
Oh, good, because I was just thinking about my own tax statement, but please go ahead.
Are you really that dodgy?
No, not really.
Okay.
I don't earn enough to be dodgy.
We're going to talk about Tim Burton's Big Eyes. That's in cinemas next week. And then we're going to discuss, is there such a thing as too much reality TV? Is that humanly possible, Mark?
And from my perspective, of course not. Bring it on.
I'm Ben McKechnie. I'm still Ben McKechnie. I am Ben McKechnie.
I'm Mark Hadley. Thanks very much for joining us for the show.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.